Welcome to MN90, Minnesota History in 90 Seconds.
Uncle Harvey's Mausoleum, also known as the Icebox or the Cribs, is an intriguing structure located just off the shoreline in Duluth's Canal Park. Constructed in 1919, it has sparked numerous theories about its purpose over the years. Some speculate it was a gambling house during Prohibition, while others believe it served as a tomb. However, the truth is far less romantic, but equally fascinating. Named after Harvey Whitney, who operated a sand and gravel business with his brother, Uncle Harvey's mausoleum was actually a sand and gravel hopper. The Whitney Brothers Company transported sand and gravel around Lake Superior, and Harvey built the hopper to alleviate shipping traffic in Duluth's busy harbor. Despite its practical purpose, the hopper was abandoned after just 3 years of use in 1922. With the decline in ship traffic and the lack of an outer harbor to support the operation, the structure fell into disuse and disrepair. But over time, it became a fixture in the lake, serving as a nesting site for birds and a destination for adventurous swimmers.
MN90 is produced by Ampers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities. Made possible by funding from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Online at mn90.org.
Hello, Counter Stories listeners. We have been doing this show in various formats for 10 years. And in those 10 years, it has always been the four of us, Halea Lee, Luz Maria Frias, Anthony Galloway, and Donald Eubanks. In March of this year, Don passed away. In the weeks to come, as we take time to grieve and reflect on Don's life and his immense impact throughout the state, we will be re-airing some of Don's favorite episodes and topics. Today, we are sharing one of our 2023 legislative wrap-up episodes. For this show, the crew met at the native-owned Makwa Coffee Shop, Don's go-to in his Roseville neighborhood, to talk with Representative Jamie Becker Finn about public safety and gun control. Welcome to Counter Stories, a program by people of color, for people of color, and everyone else. I'm Halea Lee, owner of the Other Media Group, Counter Stories producer and VP of programming at Ampers.
Anthony Galloway, pastor of St. Mark AME Church in Duluth, Minnesota, and partner at the Dendros Group.
And I'm Don Eubanks, member of the Mille Lacs Band of Old Dribble Indians and associate at Dendros Group.
And we have a special guest joining us today as we continue our legislative wrap-up, and I'll have her introduce herself.
So I'm Jamie Becker Finn. I'm a state representative here in the Roseville area. Represent Roseville, most of Roseville, half of Shoreview, but I am Leech Lake Ojibwe descendant, grew up in the Cass Lake area up north, and I am the current House Judiciary Finance Chair in the legislature.
Thank you for joining us. This week, we are back to talk about the public safety package / gun control measures. Can you give us like kind of a brief introduction to what that is?
Yeah, well, so this was the omnibus public safety and judiciary bill, kind of to move things along more quickly in the legislature. Our bills get combined. And so this is the bill that oversees all of the funding and statutes related to our courts, our justice system, policing, as well as things like gun control and gun violence, victim services, all those sort of things in the justice sphere are incorporated in this one omnibus bill.
And I know one thing that we were particularly interested in was the red flag law. I think that's that term itself is something that people have been talking a lot about. So what does that mean, red flag law?
Yeah, so technically the language is it's an extreme risk protection order. So if people are familiar with like an order for protection in a domestic violence case, it sort of mirrors that process. But in cases where we think somebody might be a danger because of the use of a gun, either a danger to the community or a danger to themselves. So the way this language is set up is that a county attorney, a sheriff, or a family member can petition a court, give reasons why they're requesting this petition so that a person would be not allowed to have weapons, to have firearms. So specifically, you'd be asking them to turn in those firearms and they would be blocked from going and purchasing a firearm. So it kind of... it's broad enough to have a lot of different uses, whether it's somebody who's been threatening to other people in a domestic violence situation, or if it's someone who maybe has been struggling with mental health issues, and you want to make sure that they're protected personally as well. You know, and I think some people are concerned, you know, oh, this is just a way for, you know, a court or, you know, the system to take guns away from people. And so it's a process. You have to petition, the facts have to be there, and then there's a hearing. And so if there's a case to be made that this isn't appropriate to do, well, then there's due process there. So I think that was one of the things people kind of spun around was, you know, this is taking away my Second Amendment right mm-hmm. without due process. Well, it's there's a whole process built right. in.
Yeah, I think that's what we heard most. And being in the headspace that I am is like, you know, if somebody is a danger to themselves or their family, that they shouldn't be able to go in and get a gun so easily. And so that makes sense to me. Right.
I'm kind of tired because one of the things that happens often is that, particularly in Black community space, these narratives or these things that get pushed out kind of mirror with some of our valid concerns about how systems have treated us in the past, and they mm-hmm. kind of marry together. Mm-hmm. And so you get this sense that somehow, you know, folks are led to believe that there is no process, that it's all of these different things. When in actuality, it's the same rules as everybody else. We saw a similar thing when a whole lot of African Americans, in particular, just using that community's perspective, started joining the NRA, and now all of a sudden, we don't see the same defense of their experience, but joining the same organization, just like all the multitude of hunters who do have gun safety, who do have all this stuff. And I keep running into a whole lot of folks who practice really good gun safety, and they have guns at home, and they see nothing red. They see no red flags here. It's just common sense in that space. So who's pushing that?
No one's
going
to come knock on your door and be like, you have to hand over your gun now. Somebody said that you're dangerous.
This is Counter Stories. You're listening to a special rerun of one of our 2023 episodes. I'm Haley with co-hosts Anthony Galloway and the late Donald Eubanks, with special guest Representative Jamie Becker Finn. This program is supported by AMPERS and the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.
So I'm just commenting, you know, listening to your comment, Anthony. When did the NRA ever uphold those?
For sure.
Okay, I'm just saying, because you know, your statement made it sound like they kind of stopped. And I don't remember them ever
having it in the first place.
Up, you know, especially, I mean, and when we pull up recent events like Philando Castile, mm-hmm. for instance, had a concealed carry, was not reaching for his gun. Mm-hmm. Where was the NRA mm-hmm. to stand up and talk about his rights? Remember how silent that was? Mm-hmm. We could hear crickets. You know, there were other portions of that bill also, mm-hmm. right? I mean, the other kind of common sense thing that's you know, is common sense to me, at least, is when you go now to gun shows or whatever, you could just purchase a weapon and you didn't have to go through any of that background check that you do when you go to a gun dealer. Mm-hmm. And I never understood that.
Right.
Okay, so I mean, so now this measure, the bill puts folks now have to go through that, correct?
Right. So we expanded the background check bill so that it's universal background checks now. So there's not sort of that loophole where if your friend knows a guy who knows a guy who's going to sell you a gun, or if it's on Craigslist or online or, you know, in a Facebook group or at a gun show, that you have to go through the same background check process that the rest of us do when we buy a gun from like Joe's Sporting Goods. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm one of the members of the DFL caucus who does own guns. I've grew up hunting and, you know, grew up around guns in northern Minnesota. And, I went to go buy a new hunting rifle last year, and it's really not that onerous of a process. Mm. It's like, I mean, maybe it meant that I spent a little bit more money at Joe's in like the 10 minutes where I was waiting for my background check to come back. So maybe it's good. It's good for small business. But I think that, again, like the most most reasonable gun owners are used to this process, right, and it's not that big of a deal. And the other thing I think is important to point out, because it gets all these things get muddied for political reasons, but the background check bill only applies to handguns. So it actually doesn't even apply to long guns and hunting rifles. So these people who are sort of spinning into, what do you mean I can't just give my hunt, my grand, you know, my, I can't just give my gun to my grand. This doesn't even apply to that. And we also had exceptions if it's a parent to a child or a close family relationship that you can do this. So there's all kinds of exceptions in this bill as well for the reasonable things that many of us do. It's just saying you shouldn't be able to walk into a gun show at literally anybody and just pay cash and walk away with a handgun without going through those processes.
But you can still pick up an AR-15.
No, it's handguns and SAMSAWs. It gets really technical, but it does apply to assault type. But if you start using the word assault type, then people will start like parsing with you those definitions. Mm-hmm. But it's all defined in statute.
Mm-hmm. But that's why I asked that, because you use two terms, rifles and long guns. I'm thinking, well, when I heard the term long gun, to me it meant rifle, but you use both terms. So what is under the category of long gun?
So it basically is, it doesn't apply to a rifle or a shotgun that you would use for hunting.
Okay.
So all of the things sort of like blowing this into, oh, you're making it harder for people to hunt is like just nonsense.
So I'm sure you guys heard the argument that AR-15s, we use those for hunting. I mean, that's the argument. I'm serious. That's the argument I always heard.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
The only times I've ever shot that weapon was with folks who had it with them while they were hunting. Now, fully disagree that they brought it for the purposes of hunting. They brought it for the purposes of
making a point
while they were hunting. It's a very different thing and different purposes online.
Exactly.
And I can tell you right now, I was real uncomfortable with their ability to have something like that, because it was completely unnecessary. But I mean, we're playing the same thing, but that's where the muddiness comes in there. And so then, you know, and I have folks in community who will tie, who will be nervous about this because of what people have these rumors of folks have put out there. But for the purposes of what the Second Amendment meant to the freedom of African Americans, where the Second Amendment was, you know, upheld their ability to protect themselves physically. And so there's this, again, this muddying of certain things. And so you can get folks to arrive at opposition to something that makes sense like this, especially targeting handguns, which are the thing that has you be the most unsafe as it pertains to guns. So that makes sense. But then putting that together, and now a community who is going to be benefited by something is now, because of rumors and you know, twisting things around, are in opposition to it. And we see that used throughout history to kind of divide.
Yeah, but and part of that, though, however, is there's a history. Mm. I mean, there's a history. I mean, I grew up during the time with the Black Panthers, mm-hmm. right? And they did nothing more than what you see all these kind of militia groups mm-hmm. where they arm themselves and call themselves patriots and they're protecting somebody's rights. I always questioned whose, but the Black Panthers did nothing more than that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And for the first time, we had gun legislation mm-hmm. passed, mm-hmm. restricting the ability to be able to carry those long rifles mm-hmm. and other guns in the state of California by a Republican governor. The only time we had an immediate gun control legislation to address people carrying those kind of weapons was used against the Black community. So there's a history there of you know, when there's legislation, one really has to kind of from our communities really has to take a look to see, you know, where is this coming from? How is it going to impact us? Because that was directed against a particular group of individuals that did impact the whole community. And so, you know, these laws kind of have impact on both ways. I didn't grow up in a rural area on a reservation, but I spent a lot of time on a reservation. And guns are just a way of, I mean, you know, so I'm 10, 11 years old. My uncles are taking me out to the junkyard mm-hmm. and taught me how to shot or how to shoot rifles and how to shoot shotguns. Now, you know, and so I learned no one had pistols. I don't remember seeing anyone with a pistol. It was a rifle mm-hmm. or it was a shotgun, and it was for hunting mm-hmm. or traps.
Yeah, well, or I mean, the reality is when you live in rural Minnesota, there might be a rabid animal mm-hmm. or there like, and so I think that's important too, because one of the bills that didn't make it across the finish line this year was around safe storage. And they kind of, mm-hmm. the other side sort of blew that up into, you don't know what you're talking about. You don't know what it's like out here when it's literally me carrying it. And it's like, I know exactly what I'm talking about when it comes to this issue. And so I think there are definitely valid reasons. And I think these two bills in particular, I think, were narrow enough to actually address the harms that we're trying yes. to stop. And I think, you know, important that people like Cedric Frazier are carrying mm-hmm. this legislation, you know, people who come from the Posse Caucus and are doing this work as well, so that we do kind of have an eye out to make sure it doesn't shade into these areas where it's disproportionately impacting different communities in an unfair way.
This is Counter Stories. You're listening to a special rerun of one of our 2023 episodes. I'm Clay Lee, with co-hosts Anthony Galloway and the late Donald Eubanks, with special guest Representative Jamie Becker Finn. This program is supported by AMPERS and the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.
I was up at my res at Mille Lacs, and I had just brought in a load of walleye from netting, right? So a lot of the men are standing around you because there's a central place that we bring and have to weigh our fish. And so, you know, they were talking about hunting, right? Because it was that time of season mm-hmm. to go deer hunting. Well, I've never gone deer hunting, right? So I'm listening to them talk, and then I kind of jump in and I kind of mention that I've never gone deer hunting. Would they be willing to take me, right? So, because that's how you learn. Mm. Now, what was amusing about that is that the conversation got silent and no one said anything. In fact, some kind of stepped back a little bit. So, you know, so the message because silence speaks loudly in our community. So what I got from that experience was that there was a lot that I didn't know, a lot I needed to learn about hunting for the very thing that you're talking about, mm-hmm. about being safe, making sure I'm not shooting anyone else, you know. And since I had no experience doing that, none of them felt like taking any of that on, because that's usually mm-hmm. something that your uncles do. Mm-hmm. So my uncles did take me out and show me how to shoot guns, but we never did go hunting. So I didn't have the opportunity to learn that. But when I was younger, I did have my dad's older brother supposedly take me pheasant hunting. Mm-hmm. And then I realized when I got older, I was the dog.
Yep.
He had me out front and I had my slingshot. I'm thinking I'm hunting, and then all of a sudden a bird would take off and, you know.
And you'd be the retriever.
Yeah.
Oh, I can absolutely relate. My grandfather called that go get it. We would play go get it all the time and go, bow, go get it.
Go get it.
So, Don, you're closer to my husband's age, and he grew up in Duluth, but he told me that in school they had to take gun safety class. Like, mm-hmm. it was just one of the regular classes that they took that was sponsored, like an NRA member would come in and they would do gun safety.
So it's actually a DNR class.
Program.
So in order to get your license, your deer license, any of your mm-hmm. hunting licenses, you need to have completed firearm safety training. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I grew up in Cass Lake, you know, really small town. And it was when everybody turned 12, the year everybody was 12, mm-hmm. everybody every Wednesday night for like, you know, 6-8 weeks, we would go and like a DNR conservation officer would teach you gun training. I remember even then, you know, I'm 40, I was the only girl in the class, but it was like all the dads, like, right. sitting in back while mm-hmm. we're learning, and they go through all these safety things, and you need to pass that in order to get your license. Fast forward to now, even in rural areas, it's really hard to get into those classes. Mm. And so, like my 12-year-old hasn't taken it yet, because especially here in the Twin Cities, like trying to find somebody to do those classes mm-hmm. is really hard. So that's sort of an issue we're going to be working on next year as well. But I think it is very normalized in rural communities that, like, nope, this is part of the process and part of growing up, is that you kind of have that base knowledge if you're going to be using, you know, rifles to hunt. Right. I have a friend though, who I was, she asked, you know, she's around my age, and she asked if we would take her hunting this year, knowing we're like a big deer hunting family. And it was kind of the same thing where she asked, and I was like, okay, I'm going to have you buy your license, but you're not going to carry a gun. Mm-hmm. And she was like, mm-hmm. That makes sense. You know, because I wanted her to learn how this all works before we've got an extra person carrying a firearm and a group of people. So
I don't trust you to cast next to me when we're fishing.
That's a good
rule. Sure, I ain't about to trust you.
Yeah, so what my husband told me was that it was during the school day. It was like a regular class that they just had in school. And I was like, oh, well, you know, I wonder if that's something that they offered in the metro.
No.
I mean, he's in Duluth, so he's not like technically like super rural. But
no, but compared to the Twin Cities,
right?
And back then it was even smaller than, you know, probably less populated than it is now. He's a decade or so younger than I am, because in the urban area all we learned was duck and roll, right? I mean, so I mean, there were no, you know, it was civil defense. We were when I started elementary school, we were thinking that Russia was going to drop atomic bombs, so we had several defense drills where we had to hide underneath our desk like that was going to
save us. Like it was going to do anything.
Exactly, right? But no, there was nothing about gun safety. You know,
we didn't have anything either.
We didn't have anything like that until you turn 15 and then you started taking
even then we
out.
Didn't even know of anything. I mean, I think in elementary school I took a gun casing from my dad's rifle thing to show and tell, because I found it and I was like, this looks interesting. I didn't know what it was. And so then the teacher empty.
Just the brass.
Yeah.
Just the brass. Okay.
Yeah. And so I brought it in, and then the teacher like pulled me, and I think they had to call my parents. And I remember my dad being really mad about it. Like, why would you bring this? And I was like, I didn't know what it was. I thought it would be interesting. You know, we didn't know anything, and we didn't know where to learn anything.
Mm.
Well, and that's just personally, like, I now, you know, as a person living in a suburban area who's comfortable with guns and owns guns, I'm always really upfront with other parents too. And mm-hmm. I think that's sort of on all of us, is like whenever my kids go to a new house, like I ask them, do you have firearms in the house, and how are they stored? And I always offer up that information when kids are coming over to our house to like normalize. I mean, that's honestly one of my biggest goals, and even carrying the legislation, is to open up conversations so we can talk about this. Like my kids know, okay, like if you ask them, oh, it was funny. Actually, my mom asked my 9-year-old, she's going over to a new friend's house. Okay, what are you going to remember when you go to this new friend's house? And my mom's thinking she's going to say, oh, say please and thank you. And she's like, if there's a gun, leave immediately and go tell a grown-up. but I mean, those are the ways we can. I mean, those would, if everybody taught their kids those things, kids would be safer.
Right.
You know, and I think there's a difference between that idea. I think it's a great idea, but it's something that's never crossed my mind, because we didn't have the DNR coming in. Okay, so I took, there was a period, I think the second time I was at Mille Lacs, there was a time, and you know, gang issues was rearing its head heavily throughout the United States on reservations. That and opioid drugs that they were bringing in. And they were violent. So there were deaths happening, there were threats. And as a, you know, as a community, we were trying to respond to that. And word gets out. So, you know, you begin to hear people making threats, and it didn't matter if you were an appointed official, elected, you know, and so So for the first time in my life, I bought a handgun, took the required conceal and carry, and through that, they taught me how to properly store that. And I keep a lock. I keep one of those locks on my, I forget what you even call it.
A trigger lock.
The trigger lock. I keep, you know, and so my handgun is, never used it. You know, I mean, I took the conceal and carry, never carried it with me. I just, for my protection, I felt like I needed to have, so it would be in the back of my vehicle with the lock on it, so nothing could happen. And in the house, it's kept safely with the lock on there. And the only time I've ever shot is when I go to
the range,
right. And when I think about it again, I think I haven't fired that pistol in like 3 years. I mean, so, you know, but the idea was for the protection of myself and family. But I see, but you know what, so with the safety things, but I never thought about, you know, cause it's tucked away. It's got the safety lock on there. I've never worried about it, but I've never thought about, you know, of course, you don't have kids coming to the house anymore, hardly.
We have to deal with it, you know, when we go camping big woods, and we're not at, you know, local parks where at most I might run into a black bear. I know how to have done it before, know how to deal with it. The black bear didn't want nothing to do with me. I didn't want nothing to do with the black bear. We walked our separate ways. So, but when we do big woods, right, I feel compelled to bring rifles, and but rifles, right? And it's very visible. it has all the. I don't store it loaded. It you know, it's in a particular spot, and you know, I've had to stop bringing it just because my kids are uninterested in taking any kind of guns. They don't want anything to do with guns at all, and they're surrounded by a bunch of family who are all trained, took the course. I remember I took the course with some very unsettling folks who were asking questions about how they could use it in ways that I thought was real unsettling. So and the instructor was caught off guard. The instructor was like, it was hilarious. But still passed the same. I had to know the same stuff. I had to be ready for all those things. And then it's drilled in you that you want to never be in a position where you have to use a gun. So, you know, for conceal and carry. And when we took our conceal and carry class, like, I'm like, by the time I was done with the class, I'm like, I don't want to take this nowhere. Like,
You know, this conversation makes me think that the only time you are required to take anything like that is for conceal and carry. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But you can buy a rifle, you can buy.
Right.
And they're, you know, unlike rural areas where you guys had those classes, none of that is offered. Mm-hmm. You know, for responsible gun ownership or whatever. So it's, you know,
I hadn't even thought to look for DNR for that class. Yeah, right. It hadn't even come across. That would be so much easier.
Right. Yeah, we saw a lot of things pass this season, and these laws are literally affecting our lives every day. So we appreciate you coming on and joining us, and we are excited to hear about, you know, what you're working on, and hopefully when we do the legislative wrap-up next year, we'll have you back on. Thank you for joining us. I'm Halili, owner of The Other Media Group, VP of Programming at Ampers, and CounterStories producer.
Anthony Galloway, partner at the Dendros Group and pastor of St. Mark AME Church in Duluth, Minnesota.
And I'm Don Eubanks, member of the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe Indians and associate at Dendros Group.
And our special guest,
Jamie Becker Finn. So we're recording at Mukwa Coffee, which is a coffee shop that I opened a little over a year ago in my community in Roseville. So we are at 2805 Hamlin Avenue, within a neighborhood that's about a mile from where I live. And we're a community-based coffee shop, craft coffee shop, but we also are a safe space in our community for BIPOC folks, for queer folks. And it's really cool to have you all here. This is the first, I think, recording we've done in this space. So it's really neat to have y'all here. I mean, to bring it all together, the work I do as a legislator, I've had more conversations owning this coffee shop than I did knocking doors in the years previously. I have more connections to young folks, like the folks who hang out here and work for me. You know, the kind of people who don't always have time to write an email to their legislator or attend an event, I see in and out of here every day. And so that's been another really important piece of all this, is it's really just like community building and bringing folks together.
This has been Counter Stories, a co-production of the Counter Stories crew and Ampers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. For our full conversation, please visit Counter Stories.